Hello and good evening. You're listening to The Fourth Estate, a show where journalists talk journalism. Coming to you from 2SER in Sydney on Gadigal lands of the Eora Nation, right across Australia on your community radio network, and directly to your device across the globe via podcast. I'm Evie Maguire, and my producers tonight are Roderick Chambers and Lachlan Moffat Gray. Coming up on the show, The Monthly has published a retrospective on Murdoch's career, looking at what the media will look like after his reign ends. The author of the piece, Richard Cook, goes into detail about Murdoch's craftsmanship style, his long career and his political view of the world. Tonight we will dissect Murdoch's influence on the media industry in Australia and look at the type of legacy he will leave on this ever-changing media landscape. Also coming up, political editor of The Guardian, Catherine Murphy, spoke with my wonderful co-host Peter Frey yesterday about her essay called On Disruption. If you want to hear the extended interview, you can catch it on the Fourth Estate podcast app. Catherine's essay is a memoir of sorts that uncovers the 24/7 media industry and looks at what the future holds for the chaotic world that is journalism. Now, we will also have time to cover Channel 7's controversial coverage of African crime in Victoria and Fairfax's criticism on the ABC. And if I find that there is even a little bit more time, I might put to the panel a question or two about Peter Toner's efficiency review of the public broadcasters ABC and SBS. Helping me dissect this fractured media world is, in the studio, Josh Butler, senior reporter at 10 Daily. Hi, Josh.
Hi.
Carrie Fellner, investigative journalist at the Sydney Morning Herald. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Evie.
And on the line, we've got Corinne Podger, digital and mobile journalism lecturer at Melbourne University. And you're in the Southern Highlands of all places, am I right, Corinne?
That's correct. I'm joining you from Mittagong.
Talk about a place, a lovely place to do the Fourth Estate. So welcome to the show. Now, there is so much to discuss, so let's get cracking. Now, some call him a hometown hero, while others are less complimentary. Rupert Murdoch has shaped the media industry like no other. After a career that has spanned 65 years, it still doesn't look like he is going anywhere anytime soon. In the most recent The Monthly magazine, journalist Richard Cook takes a look at the life and career of a man whose retirement will possibly impact the news media industry as heavily as his life did. The piece is a good 11 pages long and paints the picture of a man who was the ultimate outsider but built the media system around him. Now, I'm going to start off with a broad question, Corinne. Do you think the nature of Australian journalism will change when Murdoch steps down?
Well, as far as the Murdoch family and its empire goes, the way that the business has been managed in recent years, it does look like it's set to remain a family-run enterprise, whether it's headed by Lachlan and or James. Are they likely to put any less pressure on competitors? Looking at how those two have run their respective parts of the business over time, probably not. Will they inherit their father's views on Brexit or Trump or the political landscape here in Australia? It's difficult to say. I think what we can say, and Catherine Murphy talked about this last night, is that we have a highly dichotomised media at the moment, and these function largely as echo chambers. We have audiences that choose not to expose themselves to views they don't really agree with. So I think what will be really interesting to see is whether there's movement from News Corp to participate, I guess, in wider calls for the media to create spaces for dialogue between people with strong views so that they can talk to each other. Or whether we're likely to see a continuation of what we have at the moment, which is competing voices on all sides, let's say, shouting each other down.
I mean, Carrie, what do you think?
If anything, like, I tend to think that it's going to head in the opposite direction. But, yeah, I suppose time will tell.
I mean, Josh, following on from that point, Murdoch did build a lot of his empire in the 80s and 90s. Do you think it will be as successful as it was then after he passes?
Do you mean, like, if it was to be restarted today?
Yeah.
That's a really tough question. I mean, the success that he had was in drawing together a whole massive network of news, I guess. You know, the sort of empire spans, you know, print and TV and radio and, you know, now online and that sort of thing. I think it would be much harder to replicate that success today just because the media, you know, the media as we look at it as some sort of a conglomerate sort of analogous sort of lump is so much more fragmented now. And I don't think it'd be as easy to sort of pull together all those different elements today if you were trying to do what he has done. But in saying that, I mean, to go to the question you asked previously, like how would it change after he passes? I mean, I don't think it will change that much for a while at least. I think once the next generation of journalists perhaps come in, once the current generation of editors and senior journalists and that sort of thing move out, the ones that have been crafted in that sort of Rupert Murdoch image, they know what he wants. They know how, those sort of papers and websites and TV stations are supposed to be run. Once those people move on, perhaps in 10 years, 20 years, maybe even some of them, I think we will see those sort of publications maybe change, and it will depend on, whoever takes over after Rupert, how they sort of try to plan to run things.
Do you think then that News Limited might change?
I don't think it'll be kind of like a Lord of the Rings sort of thing where the tower in Mordor sort of falls over and, it all changes. I think there will be change, but I don't think it's going to be like an overnight sort of thing,
I think the broader pressures on the industry, if anything, with advertising revenue, will have more of an impact on the future of News Corp publications than anything else. I think what's interesting, 10 years ago, Murdoch was in the press saying that he was confident about the survival of his publications. And then, this year or last year, he was, suddenly his whole attitude had changed quite dramatically. And he was, saying he was struggling to keep his empire viable. So, the fact that you've got a baron like him that's saying those kind of things is, quite telling, I would think.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because Cook says in the piece that he definitely, he labels the style of journalism as craftsmanship. And I just following on from that point, do you agree with that sort of characterization? Do you think that he has dumbed down journalism?
I reading Cook's article, and it was a fantastic article, but I do tend to think that the sort of heavy criticism that News Corp sustains isn't necessarily fair if you're looking at their publications as a whole. They have some outstanding journalists there doing some really amazing work, particularly in investigations.
What do you think, Corinne? Do you agree?
I agree with Kerry, actually, that, one really needs to look at the broad range of that business. I think it's a comfortable criticism to say News Corp, and really to, what one needs to think about is that's the newspaper publishing side of that perhaps irritates or is a thorn in the side of some of the liberal press is a very small part of that business.
That's a really good point. I think a really good illustration of that would be, you look at Sky News, and a lot of people like to sort of, have a go at Sky News and that sort of thing. But you look at, the split between their daytime coverage and what people like to call the Fox, Sky News After Dark, or the Foxification of Sky News. You've got, in the daytime, you've got these journalists Kieran Gilbert and David Spears, who are some of the best journalists going around if you look at politics. But then after night, at night time, they have Mark Latham and they have Rowan Dean and they have, these sort of more, I'm trying to think of a very polite term here, partisan kind of, honestly hacks, but there has to be a split between what you look at on a purely sort of news value and what they do on an opinion sort of side of things. And I think a lot of the things that people have a go at News Corp for is they're leaning on opinion, but you look at the journalism they do and it's, it's undeniably some of the best journalism in the country.
You're listening to The Fourth Estate, where journalists talk journalism, and I'm Evie Maguire. Joining me this week is Josh Butler from 10 Daily, Carrie Filner from the Sydney Morning Herald, and Corinne Podger, digital and mobile journalism lecturer at Melbourne University. Now, speaking of journalism in Australia, we had Catherine Murphy in the studio yesterday. She's political editor of The Guardian, and she's written an essay about the future of journalism. It's called On Disruption, and she dives deep headfirst into the 24-hour, 7-days-a-week news cycle. Now, Corinne, you were at the event last night at UTS where Catherine spoke to Peter Frey about the essay. I have to say, the book, I've got it right here in the studio, but it reminds me a little bit about The Little Book of Calm from Black Books. what was it like at the event yesterday? And I guess, do you agree with what Catherine's saying?
The event was terrific, and it was great to hear, actually, that Walkley Foundation recorded the conversation between Catherine Murphy and Peter Frey, and that will be available as a podcast on their website fairly soon. It's definitely not a little book of calm. it's a very intriguing and I think, unusual personal take and personal perspective, so a micro take on the macro disruption to the industry, and I found that really interesting. What resonated strongly with me, because I've been made redundant myself and I've, friends with many journalists who've lost their jobs and seen so many good reporters lose their jobs. Journalism is indeed in a fight for its life, and I really that really resonated with me. Something that Catherine mentioned in relation to journalism was that she's not in favour of journalism as a voice of God. You know, and what I've just said perhaps suggests that I am. But I'm not. But I am, you know, I am in favour of bringing more voices into social discourse. But I think that there is a role for journalists as curators, as fact-checkers, as investigators, and as an appropriately named fourth estate to hold people in positions of power to account. Now, if that can be achieved by perhaps joining forces more often with the audience, then that moves aside from that voice of God. But I felt that talk really put a personal spin on the value of the industry and what we lose collectively when it's under threat.
Well, she did make the point in her essay that the 24-hour news cycle is tumultuous. I mean, we're constantly bombarding people with information and filing stories more than we ever have. I guess, frankly, this might not necessarily be a good thing, which is what Catherine alludes to. Carrie, what do you think? How do we find the right balance?
Well, yeah, it's a big question. And I guess, like, I come to it from a unique position because I have a great luxury in my job where I'm not required to file like every hour like some journalists. I've got a relatively long leash in that regard, and I know how fortunate I am to have that, and a lot of people don't. And it really is to the detriment of the reader. I mean, I think at the moment you're seeing this enormous amount of duplication as well, where you have a flock of reporters all swarming towards the one story and then all sort of like rushing to bash it out. And, you know, it just doesn't, to me, like I've always seen journalism, it's about finding out things that, you know, people don't necessarily want out there, and finding out things that other people can't necessarily find out easily. And I don't think that that kind of journalism really achieves either of those goals. I think Catherine was sort of expressing it, not wanting to look for sympathy, but, you know, journalists, it's sort of incredibly stressful environment to be working in, and I think a lot of journalists are heading towards burnout in that kind of environment as well.
Yeah, she alludes to we're kind of causing a fatigue in the industry. Josh, what do you think? I mean, do you think that this constant bombardment of content is actually losing the value of quality journalism?
Yeah, I think it definitely does. Like, that's a really broad question. I guess this is like proliferation is what I'm looking for. Proliferation of, say, like live blogs and that sort of thing around. A really good example would be live blogging Parliament, which The Guardian does, which The Australian does, which a number of publications do. They basically live blog every single development of a story in Canberra. And because that format, it's sort of necessitates that you have a new update every 5 minutes. It means that, you know, on the one hand, it's really good that people who aren't in Canberra, if they're political junkies or whatever, they can follow along on these developments and get, you know, a certain event told through the eyes of a journalist they trust. It might be Catherine Murphy used to do the Guardian Life blog, and people would go to that blog and go, okay, I want to know what her take on this unfolding news event might be. It might be a certain vote around a certain issue. It might be some big scandal, blah, blah. But on the other hand, the fact that you need to update that sort of thing every 5 minutes means that even small little events can get blown into a big story just for the fact that you've given that little, you know, some liberal backbencher has had a dummy spit on Sky News, is given the same prominence as a massive big thing just happened. So I think the fact that there is so much content out there, it number one, it sort of can blow small things out of proportion, but it's like, on the other hand, it can make big things kind of look small because, you know, a big story happens and then 5 minutes later there's another story, and then 5 minutes later there's another story. So on that sort of hand, I think it does sort of dull journalism in a way. Everyone's tweeting the same court story, everyone's tweeting the same breaking news. Like, you look at Twitter and, like, after some big event, like, it's 15 journalists in a row on your feed all tweeting the exact same tweet. So it's a lot more about curation these days. It's about, you know, going to your audience and going, like, what do you want to know? What do you actually care about? Because if you don't care about it, we won't give it to you.
I suppose that's a double-edged sword as well, because back in the day, obviously you're able to say to people, you know, this injustice here is important. We're going to put it on the front page, even if it's not necessarily what everyone's going to want to read straight away. Whereas now I think the curation on news websites is just pretty much 100% what's getting the most clicks goes at the top.
Yep, totally.
So,
make your vision come to life and train with the best at the National Institute of Dramatic Art. Pairing collaborative, practical training with valuable industry connections, NIDA offers studies in acting, musical theatre, costume, directing, production, makeup, design, scenic construction, and more. Applications for master's, bachelor, and diploma courses are now open to start in 2019. Head to apply.nida.edu.au. NIDA sponsors 2SER 107.3.
You're listening to The Fourth Estate, where journalists talk journalism, and I'm Evie Maguire. Another week, another ABC drama. This week, Fairfax Media has accused the ABC of threatening the sustainability of commercial news journalism. Fairfax has come out and said that the ABC's decision to compete on online news journalism has attracted potential paying customers away from commercial news outlets and is, quote, not in keeping with the spirit of ABC's original charter. Now, Carrie, you work in Fairfax Media. Do you think that the ABC should be charging people for their content? And do you agree with this argument?
I have to say, I know this is probably going to be an unpopular opinion. I was actually having a conversation about it a few weeks ago, and I said, like, as a commercial, like, you know, news journalist, I absolutely agree, because I, you know, it's incredibly frustrating to think that, to me, the whole idea of paywalls is never going to work while people can still get that content for free. And I do find it extremely frustrating that people expect to be able to receive news content for free. It's almost like this given entitlement with Australian audiences. And they don't seem to really grasp that, you know, to generate a sort of significant news story or, you know, a big investigation takes an incredible amount of time and resources. I mean, Fairfax just, you know, invested money in paying for me to go overseas to pursue an investigation. It came out over 3 days, and then, you know, the news cycle takes over and it's over. But they did it because they believed in quality journalism. And so to me, it's just really sad that, you know, there are organisations still willing to invest in quality journalism, but, you know, Facebook and Google and all that are taking the revenue, and we can't seem to, you know, get paywalls to work successfully in Australia.
Well, Josh, you work at 10 Daily, and it doesn't have a paywall.
No.
Do you think that ABC's free online news platform is disadvantaging your website?
To a point, it does. I get exactly what you're saying around, you know, Fairfax has to, you know, they're at a disadvantage because they have to pay for all that sort of stuff, and they're not getting taxpayer funds and that sort of thing. But at the same time, like, I think the fact that the ABC does what they do is a net positive for Australia. I understand the issue around, you know, how can an organization like Fairfax or like Channel 10 or any other commercial site or channel or whatever compete against a $1 billion publicly funded organization? And that's fair enough. I think that sometimes perhaps maybe the ABC's gone a bit too far in their remit. Maybe they don't need to do as much, say, lifestyle content. Like, I'm not sure that they need to be kind of chasing those sort of clicks on, you know, here's this great new crazy viral food burger thing that they do sometimes. Like, I'm not sure that's really in the public interest for people to know that. But, you know, I think they should be doing the news. I think people have the right to access the news for free. If they want it.
Yeah, I think the thrust of the submission was sort of saying, like, obviously no one's going to say people shouldn't be able to access a Four Corners show or something. Mm. I think the thrust of the submission was particularly that sort of run-of-the-mill journalism where people can get anywhere. You know, if,
that's
if
fair enough,
yeah. Everyone has a paywall except the ABC, then obviously people are going to go to the ABC for that.
But it's not just the ABC that doesn't have a paywall. I mean, it's easy to get free news. You've got The Guardian, the BBC Online, you've got news.com. Do you think that the ABC is being singled out a bit here?
I think they're being singled out generally, yes.
Corinne, what do you think?
Well, I worked for both the ABC and Fairfax. You know, so I thought about this question. I decided to approach it from the point of view of a consultant because I run my own business. You know, I'm responsible for making my consultancy profitable or going under. And I've got competitors who offer what I do for free for things that I would normally charge for. And I had an instance where one of those competitors was, in fact, publicly funded. It was the BBC Academy. This was in the UK. The Academy made a lot of its training materials open source a couple of years ago. And it's pertinent actually to mention that they did so because they were under pressure from commercial media outlets to demonstrate the value of the BBC. And So that happened. And the irony was that I was a British taxpayer at the time. So my taxes were effectively paying a direct competitor to put me out of a job. Mm. Right? So one has to ask, in a market economy, is it valid for me? Obviously, it's valid for me to grumble about disruptions to my business. But the BBC isn't the only source of free online training or the only competitor. So Carrie's touched on this, that the disruption to the business model is in large part down to the loss of advertising revenue to the whole of the digital ecosystem. So, you know, and arguably people have already paid for the ABC through their taxes. So I just would like to see the conversation move a little bit beyond the habit that I think we've got into, because we've had 20 years of cuts of thinking, when we talk about competition, when we talk about a healthy, sustainable, robust journalism ecosystem in this country, that it necessarily means fighting over the scraps of whatever is left of a business model that's busted. I just wish that this wasn't framed the way that it is currently. I mean, you know, the review will play out, but what I'm hoping from the review is a good outcome for the industry as a whole.
Well, speaking of the review, it came out last week that Turnbull government's review of the ABC and SBS efficiencies will be headed by former News Corp executive Peter Tonagh and former Australian Communications and Media Authority chairman Richard Bean. Josh, should the ABC be worried?
I think they have reason to be worried based on previous efficiency reviews and previous policy of the government around the ABC. I think the ABC is a very easy punching bag for Liberal governments to sort of lay into. I think I read something the other day that every Liberal government for the last 20 years or 30 years or something had done a review into the ABC, which I think is kind of telling, I guess. You know, it's the one kind of news organisation that the government has control over. So, you know, if they don't like the stories, what are they going to do? Like, you know, Fifield's written half a dozen letters to the ABC in the last couple of months about stories he doesn't like. Like, he's just like he's their pen pal or something.
I think it's part of his daily routine now.
Yeah, it's to your question about whether they should be worried, I think, you know, they should be worried because, you know, look what's happened in the last budget. Like, you know, they're trying to frame it as, oh, it's not a cut to funding, it's just a freeze of funding. But essentially it's a cut because it's not their funding's not being indexed over the next couple of years. Where at the same time, you know, you see these graphics that are shared around now and, like, it compares the funding the ABC get today to the funding they got, you know, years ago in real terms, and it's about the same in real terms. But now the ABC, you know, 20 years ago they might have just done TV and radio, and now they're doing online and radio and TV and hourly broadcast on the 24-hour news channel, and all this sort of stuff, all this massive amount of this explosion of content they're putting out with essentially the same resources. So I think the government wants them to keep doing that, but they just, you know, want them to cut back on certain things.
Well, Carrie, I mean, do you think that maybe, on the other hand, I'm joining the dots too quickly and maybe I'm sort of alluding to a theory?
I probably tend to err more on the side of what Josh was saying. Yeah. And, yeah, I think it's sort of alarming in the context, like, as much as what I said before, like, with my Fairfax hat on, like, you know, it is disappointing to have seen, you know, this whole saga with, you know, journalists there like Emma Alberici being attacked and their programming coming under attack. Like, obviously, they do a lot of great work. I mean, like, personally, I think any efficiency review, you know, going as far as maybe, like, spending less on SEO, like, I personally don't believe they should be spending huge amounts of money on things like SEO.
And Facebook promoting and that sort of thing. That's a really good point.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, like, directing maybe more resources towards undercover stories that haven't, that are worthy, but maybe don't receive the attention that they deserve from the commercial media. But certainly in terms of cuts, like, I was working up in Newcastle and the newsroom up there was sort of gutted in the last round of cuts. So to think that they're going to be stripped of even more funding, I mean, you really wonder, you know, how far they can cut to the bone. Like,
Corinne, do you think that the review's necessary?
I'm trying to think of positives because I think we've identified some of the potential risks. It's always useful, I think, to have an opportunity, if it is presented as an opportunity, to think about how can we do what we do better. You know, and in the way that the digital landscape is at the moment, that's never a bad thing, right? But if we're talking about is there any fat left to cut? You know, we've been beyond that for a long time. We have hit gravel and I say we as a former ABC person and, you know, someone who, you know, knows a lot of people there, former colleagues and so on. I'll give you an example. When I last worked at the ABC in 2012, the night shift at ABC Radio Australia was a solo operation, right? So that was one person covering the Asia-Pacific region for radio bulletins, online and social. You ate at your desk and you ran to the bathroom. So, you know, it's what can be achieved from a review that's slated efficiency. It does sound like it will be more cuts. And, you know, from an Australian point of view, as you know, speaking as an Australian who loves Australian journalism, who loves, you know, hearing about Australian stories, that's a collective loss. And I think, you know, where we lose programs, where we lose outlets, where we lose jobs, where we lose journalists, we should mourn that collectively, because I don't think we're better off as a country when that happens.
And I suppose on that note, that's where I find it really hard to understand how the organisation could be spending money boosting Facebook posts or, SEO boosting, because it does really seem as though the journalists are getting squeezed so much on the front line. So, you know, you wonder if it's a question of management priorities higher up. I don't know.
Well, it's an interesting point. And, you know, I mean, there are two things to talk about there, because one is Facebook and one is Google. And I think the Facebook algorithm change at the beginning of the year, which is all about people spending more time with advertisers on Facebook. If you're not sponsoring or promoting your content on Facebook, the simple reality is it is less likely to be seen. Some outlets like Slate have recorded a factor of 10 fall in reach and engagement. Google, you know, I think a different sort of case has to be made for spending on Google, but Facebook, if you're not spending on there, you are effectively invisible.
But I mean, everyone knows.
So maybe there's a question around, and you know, I think that's a question that all media outlets. This is kind of off topic, Evie, but you know, it's a question that all media outlets need to be asking is, you know, are we going to continue to invest in a Facebook presence into 2019? But that's another show.
Mm. Josh, you...
Yeah, I mean, like, I totally agree there. And I get the ABC wants to have their stories in front of more eyes and that sort of thing. But, like, you know, everyone knows how to reach the ABC's website. I mean, like, that, I don't think... I mean, I have kind of a complicated opinion on this. I think there is immensely a case for the ABC to exist and to do news and to do as much news as possible in as many interesting ways as possible for you know, this idea of the public good, for public interest and that sort of thing. But at the same time, I don't think we should be shoving it down people's throats. I mean, there's a way to do the news and tell people about what's going on and keep Australians informed through a government-funded news agency without them having to dominate Facebook, having to dominate Twitter, having to dominate YouTube and all these other social platforms and that sort of thing. I mean, there's a balance you can strike between giving people the news and, you know, giving people an opportunity to make themselves informed, but without, you know, at the same time, totally dominating other, you know, Fairfax and News Corp and that sort of thing. I mean, like, I don't think they should be spending massive amounts of money on Facebook promotion. I don't think they should be spending massive amounts of money on SEO keywords and that sort of stuff. I mean, there's a balance you can strike there without, you know, give people the news, but don't ram it down their throats, I think is kind of the point I'm trying to make.
You sound like Catherine Murphy.
I think, like, the other side of it that's frustrating to me is I feel like it's sort of this insidious thing in the entire media industry, whether or not you're public or private, is that we're all, you know, in this race to attract Facebook audiences and to have our posts do well and get, you know, more likes and more shares. And that's really, I mean, at the end of the day, what are we seeing for it? Because, you know, 90% of the revenue generated is going to Facebook. They're, you know, so in terms of the industry's struggle to survive, and like it was said before, we're in a fight for our life. And yet the entire focus of every organisation at the moment just seems to be more Facebook likes. And I don't know that that's the answer.
Well, on that note, we're going to have to finish the show today, but that's it from us on For The State today. Thank you to my guests, Josh Butler from 10 Daily, Carrie Fellner from the Sydney Morning Herald, and Corinne Podger, digital and mobile journalism lecturer at Melbourne University. Next week, Peter Frey will be back in the host seat. Make sure you're subscribed to For The State on your favourite podcast app so you can hear us talk media, politics, and a few things in between. We'll be back with more next week, but in the meantime, you can stay in touch with us on Facebook and Twitter. Our Facebook is For The State AU. I'm Evie Maguire. Thank you for listening.
David Dungay Jr. died in Long Bay Jail after he refused to stop eating a packet of biscuits.
On the morning of December 29th, 2015, corrective service officers stormed the Dungay men.